Welcome to the City of Morro Bay Public Works Advisory Board and the first order of business is the call to order and the roll call. I'm Vice Chair Barry Dorfman. The Chair Lady Vicki Landis is studying for finals and we wish her well.
Absolutely.
And if everyone introduced themselves, I think that's good so the public knows.
I'm Bill Olson.
My name is Noah Smuckler.
Roger Ewing.
And following the protocol established by Chair Lady Landis last week, we will have a moment of silence. Okay. The next item is the acceptance of the agenda. All members have the agenda, and it was flashed on the screen. Aside from Vicki Landis not being here, Mr. Cole and Mr. Yaroslavsky are not here. Mr. Cole.
Croyle.
Croyle. Excuse me. Thank you. Submitted his resignation. Since he submitted it publicly, he said he has some health concerns, and we were just getting going as a group. We'll certainly miss him and wish him well. John has also submitted a resignation I saw via email. I don't have the hard copy. He had struggles between both his business and an enlarging family. We'll very much, especially tonight, miss his wastewater expertise, but again, we wish him well. My understanding from Mr. Boucher is that the City Council is aware of both of these. They're in the process of processing them, and I'm sure we'll hear and stay tuned for how the membership goes. And are there any other written communications anyone knows about? Okay. This is now the time for public comment and presentations. All that are gathered here are staff and from the video personnel. So I think we will close.
I think it's a typo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe Bob Croyle was present at that meeting. Down in the second paragraph, Croyle observed that for a few $100 the city.
He was at the last meeting.
He was?
He made that, I remember him making that comment.
Yes.
So perhaps.
I stand corrected. Uh-huh. Maybe it was me who wasn't here. Oh, well.
We'll move him from the absent to the in attendance.
This is the present one here.
Okay, I stand corrected.
No, he's actually listed as absent.
Yes, I think it was just John who was absent. I think, and the change would be just not in the text, but in who was listed as absent.
Okay.
And
thanks, Roger.
Well, with that, I'll move to accept the minutes from the February 15th meeting as corrected.
Any objections?
None.
We'll just do it unanimously. That's done. Is that okay? I think that fixes it. And then now to the director's report and any information items.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Good evening, board members. Just a couple items here of interest. The spring cleanup week this year will be April 10th.
Yeah. On the cleanup week, I would like to add, if people got the flyer, but don't overlook the fact that on very large items that normally you wouldn't put out because you couldn't get them in a garbage can, it's a very reasonable fee of $10 to have something carted away, and you can clean your yard and it'll be properly disposed of.
And actually, a bit of a follow-up to last week, I had mentioned the recycling guide in our phone book, and this is a good time again to point it out. It's in every phone book, it actually, there's a tab off of page 572 in the yellow pages. And once you fold that out, this is our Hackbill phone book with a blimp on the cover. It gets you right to this great index of what to do with different materials. And a lot of these things you can find people to pick up, or they'll tell you exactly what the hours are for the places that would accept them. So it's a good resource if you're looking for materials outside of the regular hazardous waste.
Okay. Now moving on.
Thank you. At the February 27th City Council meeting, the council moved to reduce the Dial-A-Ride fares for the Saturday service. As you may recall, what we've been seeing is a reduction in ridership on the Saturday service, and so hopefully the reduction in the rates will foster increased ridership. We're actually providing, I believe there's a free fare day this Saturday, I think, I remember hearing. But if you're interested, please contact Janine Burlingame. She's at 772-626, March 8th hearing. The commission did approve the project with some conditions. We're in the process now of identifying the costs of those conditions of approval, and we'll be reporting back to council on what we can build and the scheduling and stuff like that there.
I have a question, if I may, please, on an item above Harbor Walk.
Sure.
Streets. Mm-hmm. Is this the time to mention when a repair might be noted?
Sure.
Dune and Napa. There is a growing problem, and I think it's due to the rain, and pothole is getting larger and larger, and when it is filled with rainwater, it can't be seen, and tires going through it could suffer severe damage.
Yeah, that's right there at the dip.
Right at the dip.
Yes.
Thank
you. Yes, I've seen that.
And one other thing, under Underground Utility District 6 and 7, it says notice of formation of District 7. Where is District 7?
District 7 is on Main Street from Dunes to Highway 1 and Beach Street from Main to West.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. And roundabouts.
Yes, sir.
What is the status on the Morro Bay Quintana Road roundabout, please? Because that was raised at the council meeting.
It's waiting funding.
By Caltrans?
Well, it's state funds, right, and indirectly Caltrans, but yes.
So Morro Bay's input is complete, and we're just waiting on Caltrans.
That's correct.
Thank you.
At Monday night's meeting, the City Council discussed this board for them to pick out three items, three action items, and to report back to the council by the end of May. That stuff went out today, so I don't know exactly when the individual boards, which would be Community Promotions, Harbor Advisory Board, Rec and Parks Commission, and Planning Commission, when they'll precisely be agendized, but stay tuned for more information.
Bill?
Yes.
Would our board also weigh in again on the three items that we would recommend that the council focus on?
Yes. I think you want to pick out the three items that you would like to address. Yes.
Right, because I don't believe Noah and I had a chance.
The board didn't take any action on any of the individual action items.
Right. To review, the advice was
right
how to get engaged in the process.
Right.
And we wanted it.
Appreciate that.
To involve everyone, so when it comes back, it's really just as the board and the things we're concerned with. If I can just clarify, in the Harbor Walk project, are we since so many of the funds come from elsewhere, but they may not be sufficient, as I understand it, because of the additional requirements?
That's possible. That's correct.
Are we in a, how tight is the time constraint to work that issue through before?
It's a very short fuse. The allocation requests for the funds have to be submitted by early April, with allocation of one of the grants, $500,000 grant, by the end of June. Okay. And at that point, once the funds are allocated, we have to have a construction contract within 6 months.
So
the time is nigh.
Any accommodation that the city council has to make has to be done quickly.
Correct.
Well,
if we get the data in time, we're looking at going to the April 10th council meeting. So we're really on a pretty short turnaround. Well, the first thing we need to do is redo the cost estimate and take into consideration the conditions of approval. The funding side of the equation is easy. That's set. It's the expenditure side that we have to accommodate those conditions of approval. And frankly, we don't know and suspect that there'll be issues, certainly, with the funding. Once we get the cost estimate for the full contemplated project with the additional conditions of approval, then we can start looking at things that we might have to cut out. But the first thing we're doing is to see where we are.
And then, again, pursuing timelines and thinking of things that may come before the board, and I'm looking at the item of the Joint Powers Agreement, the wastewater treatment facilities plan, contractor to prepare that plan. Did the interviews get completed?
Yes, he did.
And will we have any interaction with that process?
No, sir.
Okay.
Except for
pardon?
Except a comment.
Right.
Council.
Yes. Yeah, that's an item reserved for the city council and under the JPA okay. format.
And now let you continue with the report.
And I turn it over to Mr. Cunningham.
Okay. Good evening, members. First thing I wanted to note, Mr. Ewing, you had mentioned the pothole, and I think I had mentioned the last meeting. We do have a work order system, so you are capable as well.
Like tomorrow, put a work order in?
I can do that for you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we'll see.
Thank you for the reminder, too.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
Frank, would you mind saying that number one more time?
772-6261. Chances are you'll get Kathy.
All right. Hey, Kathy.
The first thing I wanted to note on the first page here was the entry sculpture. I had noted that there, you know, we've gotten a couple of complaints of people kind of thinking they thought it was supposed to look like the rock, or, you know, they were just concerned. And some people were a little concerned that, oh, I thought there was supposed to be a waterfall and, you know, and just certain, you know, promises and whatnot. The rock sculpture was hit by a vehicle back around Christmas time. It did some damage to the plumbing. And last I heard from the volunteers that are actually maintaining this and taking care of this, they're actually re-looking at the pumping system. I don't think they liked what was going on there. And so they're ordering some new pumps and equipment. So just to pass that on, in case you're hearing anybody wondering what's going on out there, it is one on a volunteer basis, so they get out there when they can. And sometimes wintertime, it's kind of hard to get out there when it's cold or rainy and whatnot. So thought I'd mention that.
Thank you.
The other thing, the creek cleaning issue did go back to council, as we had mentioned on February 14th. This was discussed not as a public hearing. It was really just kind of to let the council look at the issue of what exactly the creek cleaning costs, you know, between, you know, city properties, you know, private, commercial, residential properties. So we had a discussion kind of yards, maintain the creeks. So there'd be kind of a right of entry, you know, statement, an indemnification statement, and then some sort of a clause that they're willing to reimburse the city, you know, some nominal fee as approved on the city fee schedule. So there's some stuff in progress there with the council. That'll come back to the council probably in April as a public hearing to let the public come in and further discuss that.
And when you go into someone's backyard, let's say you pick a day, Will they be notified that that day there will be somebody coming in? Or?
You bet. I mean, okay. They'd actually be filling out this little form requesting us to go in there. And the time frame that Fish and Game is kind of allowing us to go in there is squeezing down so tight that it's going to be kind of, you know, August or September, you know, maybe early October, that, what we do is notify them, and, you know, just because a lot of times we bring a lot of crews out there, and not city crews, but, you know, CDF, CMC, or, you know, other crews.
I'd have a note, Miners Hardware in the nursery department, they have just finished, or getting close to finish their creek side rehabilitation project right out the back of the nursery. And if anyone's looking for ideas for their creek property, it's a good place to go and watch it fill in.
The other thing that I noted right below the creek cleaning was, and this was kind of listed on your future agenda items, was the petition regarding improvements and safety concerns at Quintana and South Bay Boulevard. We probably should have thrown it on the future to you guys just to kind of let you know what's sort of being proposed by development and probably my opinion. And since both of these developments are tracks, they'll be going through the Planning Commission and then also the City Council for approval. So the whole process is kind of working its way up through the channels here.
May I ask a question, please?
You bet.
That study, traffic study, who hired the engineers to do that?
The developer.
Shouldn't the city be the one doing the hiring as an independent?
No, typically we put the burden on them to
pay for it.
To pay for it and have it done, and then I review it over.
Oh, okay.
So you know, and I, this is actually my third time making comments, you know, and I think this is a final draft. At least it doesn't say preliminary on it. So I'll be looking it over and bring it to you guys, and we can discuss it. And this gives us the opportunity to kind of agree or disagree.
Okay.
And make some recommendations.
Thank you.
That would be in April. The traffic study would be completed by April also?
Well, the traffic study is done. Okay. So I have that. Now it's, you know, I intended to bring it to you in March, but when I got it, I didn't have it by, you know, last week when we sent out packages, but I happened to get it today. So I'm just letting you know that. Will be on the future April meeting.
New members, the process, I think, has served us well because Frank does review it, and he, you know where Frank stands, but he gives all the perspectives, even those that he doesn't agree with. So well, I think well, we, it's served us very very well.
For a stop sign or something that I would normally bring to you. So the fact that I got a petition, which involves the public, sort of further, you know, pushes me to bring this to you because it's of concern to the public and developers are moving on some stuff. So
will the public be notified of this agenda item on a meeting? Well, those who sponsored the petition, for example, be notified so that they know that a subject they care very deeply about is being presented in a public forum.
Yes.
We'll do our best
because there was just a couple of people that initiated it. So
right.
I think a couple of phone calls can get the word out.
Thank you. That would be appropriate.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're trying to fill up the audience, aren't you?
Yes. I mean, Steve is pleasant to look at, but a little more might help.
That's one of the reasons we've established this procedure, even though this has been on the agenda for seemingly a number of months, mm-hmm. to just keep on repeating this is going to be heard, so people
okay.
are beginning to get
yes.
primed.
Let's see. The next thing I wanted to bring up, I wrote down here on sidewalks and ADA compliance, and there's actually two things. In case you've driven by the Quintana and Main Street project up the hill there from that intersection. If you see a little grading going on the front that looks like a little ramp going up between the trees, that's our Class 1 bike path.
Ah.
Started this week. So, yeah, I'm kind of
Very
excited
nice.
About it.
Very good.
So they are moving on that, so that's a good note. And what I noted in your director's report was the contractor has begun and is the work out there at the Morro Bay High School, the crosswalks and the path in.
It recently is raining, so it's hard to get out there. you guys are moving.
We snuck in between the rain pattern. Actually, I think that's all I had, so I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
Further, we'll proceed.
We have more, don't we?
Well, on the director's report, not each and every item is commented on.
Oh.
Be here all night. It's the ones
we kind of highlight.
Are highlighted because something happened,
like at the council action, or the something is now salient because the traffic study is ready or a hearing is coming up.
I do have three questions then.
Okay.
And I'll ask them very quickly and we can get off of this. Underwater category on page 3 of 3, school district water negotiations, memorandum of understanding. Will this be coming to PWAB?
This is a settlement agreement. I doubt.
Oh, settlement agreement.
Yeah.
Oh.
Was discussed at length.
Yeah, we talked about it, but the agreement itself, not likely.
Okay, thank you. Clarification is always appreciated. Second one, the DSAL discharge alternatives analysis. What is that, please?
The regional board, as part of the reissuance of the discharge permit for the desalter, decided that it was appropriate for us to do an analysis of other points of discharge. Presumably in the event that the power plant ceases operations and a coaster in the coffee break room, but we've not heard back. The results of it were that the current discharge into the outfall canal is perfectly fine. It's basically the upshot of it all, and that the constituents of the discharge are sufficiently benign as to not raise any issues above and beyond what have already been addressed.
Thank you. Okie doke. Third one, under trees, point of contention for me, unfortunately. What is the status of the eucalyptus trees at Quintana in Maine? The houses going in where all the trees got knocked down, there's like 6 or 7 left. They've been taking some out over the last year, at least I get the impression they have. Spaces between them are getting larger, and I was just curious. Those are street trees, are they not?
They are city trees.
City trees.
Yeah.
And the developer cannot move them, take them out at all?
The original plan, you know, that they submitted to the Planning Commission and City Council had designated trees that were to be removed. Mm-hmm. And those, to date, I believe, all have been removed. So they haven't taken out any more recently.
Okay.
Now, that with the exception of the two at the very north end of the project.
Right.
Now, that was a little bit of a quandary that there was two trees at the north end where the bike path was coming, and the plan kind of gave alternate one, which was to go around the tree, the two trees, and get a PG&E easement.
That's what I thought was going to happen.
Well, we all... they just didn't want to throw stuff into the mix, and the project is moving forward, and they wanted to build the thing, and I wanted it to be built.
Okay.
So the other, and this went to City Council and Planning Commission, and it was approved. If we couldn't get the easement, then we could take the trees out and let the bike path go through.
All right. So the remaining trees are set. They're not going to be.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
Now I'm hoping. You know, in a way, it would have been nice, or it would be nice if there was some trimming. You know, there's still a lot of dead branches, you know, to get out there and clean it up before we put a nice, you know, class one bike path on there. But I'm not sure I have that kind of push or pull with the developers.
If the trimming would then be paid by the developer?
Well, they're not obligated at this point in time. They did some trimming, you know, down on the lower ends, you know, for a lot of the debris and dead branches, but I don't think they were ever conditioned to go in there and thin them out or, you know, trim them up. A lot of people want them sort of left naturally.
Okay. Thank you very much. You've answered my questions. Appreciate it.
We move on
to old business.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The item under old business is the sewer system master plan update, and we're doing chapters 5 through the end. We'll do a little recap. which includes the recommended plan of action. As you recall, certainly the board members that were here at the time, late last summer, we introduced the item, chapters 1 through 4, which kind of gave you a characterization of the system itself. Now, I think it's important to note that the deficiencies that have been identified during rain conditions. It's a chronic condition because it can happen every time there's a severe rain, but it's not something that happens on a regular basis. But it's critical that we mitigate these issues and that we minimize the risk of untreated wastewater getting out into the water courses. So that's the plan that we're striving to develop and to implement, is one that provides the highest level of assurance that we don't have any spills under any reasonably predictable conditions. Now, having said that, there's always some biblical event that would overtax the system, but that's what we've been striving to do.
For purposes of the sewer system plan, that's really the collection system.
That's correct.
And so that's separate from the capacity of the plant.
That is correct.
It's whether the sewer can handle everything.
That's correct.
Including its deficiencies, yeah. Leaks. That
the treatment plant will go through its own analysis on what its capacity needs to be under the same conditions. So certainly when that analysis is performed as part of the facilities plan for the wastewater plant, by Morro Bay having completed the collection system plan, we can tell the engineers, here's our design flows. This is what the plant needs to be hydraulically capable of treating from Morro Bay. Cayucos will have to do a similar analysis for that, so that the plant, the new plant, the upgraded plant, whatever terminology you'd like to use, is physically capable of capturing and treating and there are our maintenance superintendent really has a plan to upgrade those stations and to change the type of station. I think there's particularly I'll just take a few minutes in this regard. We've got three lift stations in our community, which is actually pretty good for a community of our geographic size. The community of Cayucos has 5 lift stations. That's just topographic constraints. Our 3 lift stations, 2 of them are in 2 of the most critical locations within the community. One is right at the intersection of South Bay Boulevard and Quintana Road. If there's a problem there, it spills to the estuary. The other is in the Front Street parking lot. Any spill goes directly to the bay. So those are really, really critical components that they need to be the best possible and have the best level of protection for those sensitive resources. So those not only need... there are certain maintenance activities that you need to perform for the piping system, but clearly the mechanical systems, the pumping systems, need to be looked at even much more closely.
Even so?
Yes, they are. They're looked at every day.
Oh, good.
Yes. Now, I might note when we get to the project side, because what squeezes out of this analysis are the identification of current and future deficiencies and a plan to mitigate those. The plan to mitigate those involves money. Our current sewer rate structure that comes all from ratepayers as a user, on a user fee basis, generates about $1.4 million a year.
Could you clarify, is that 1.4 from the citizens of Morro Bay?
From Morro Bay only. It's not in a position to embark upon a significant capital program for the collection system. So there will need to be, and squeezing out of the back end of once this plan is adopted, we will need to adjust the rates in order to fulfill this vision. Now, the good part is that with community build-out on the horizon, other than once we get these things done, we're not like a Paso Robles that's annexing out towards Kern County. Once we get these capital facilities in place, they should be adequate into the indefinite future, and then we're into a maintenance program, which is good. So having said that, that's kind of the bad news, is that there will be significant amounts of money that we will need to invest in this infrastructure. But
is the amount of money
Do those funds primarily just come from the rate users?
Or they're all from the rate users.
Only the rate users.
That's correct. We do
commercial and residential.
Yes. We do generate certain amounts of monies in connection fees, impact fees, whatever term of art you'd like to use on that. And we will certainly use those funds. But we have never looked at least from the standpoint of water and wastewater, we have never looked at impact fees or connection fees to be a irreplaceable source of revenue for these necessary programs. You know, we can't be in a position where we don't do something because somebody doesn't build a house somewhere.
If I could ask, would it be best to proceed to, were you going to go into a bit more detail as the why of how you concluded we need to do these things? Are you
yes, we will, but I wanted to give you a
I
little,
think would be helpful.
Just so you can pick out the highlights. Now, with us tonight, again, after a six-month hiatus on the Strip, is Steve Tanaka. He's the Director of Water Resources for the Wallace Group. Steve has been working with us trying to get this master plan done through dry winters and wet winters. Now we're in deep into our second year of analysis, and we welcome Steve back. And he'll be giving us, he'll be doing a little recap, kind of a bringing back chapters 1 through 4 to, as a reminder, and then taking off from there. Thank you. Steve, it's all yours.
Great. Thank you, Bill. Can you guys hear me okay? Is it coming through?
I can hear you fine. Thank you, Steve.
Okay. I'm not sure that it's projecting.
I'm not sure your mic's on.
Are you done? Why doesn't... Oh, he's going to do a power thing.
Very good. Okay. Great. Thank you, Bill. Good evening, members of the board and staff. I'm pleased to be here again tonight to present the second half of the sewer system master plan update. As Bill had mentioned, we were here several months back and went over the initial first four chapters of the plan. Most of you were here for that. I am going to do a brief recap of what we talked about last, and then we'll go into more of the details of the evaluation of the existing system, both the collection system and the lift station. And the joint sewer facilities that are owned by the city and Cayuga CSD. So with that, I'll get underway. If you recall, back in September, when we met, we provided you a brief overview of the background and the demographic, one of the key issues and findings relative to the past couple years of evaluation of the city's collection system in regards to inflow and infiltration. So I'm going to do a brief overview of that, and then I'm going to get into kind of the meat of the project recommendations and the analysis of the collection system. Back in 1986, the city had a sewer master plan prepared, and this was, I believe, by CH2M Hill. That report served the city well for the past 20 years, but it was certainly time for an update to go back and take a look at how the city's wastewater system has been forming and how it needs to take shape in the future to meet future needs. We see some growth in the city. Obviously, we are getting close to build out, but there are some significant developments that are currently under planning here that need to be taken under consideration. We also know that since 1986, the city has grown a small amount, but in more importantly, there's been a lot of aggressive water conservation conducted by the city, and in fact, wastewater flows have decreased while the population has increased back since 1986, so that's very notable. And we took a look at what the prior recommendations were in that 1986 report relative to which improvements needed to be done and have therefore been completed, which recommendations still need to be completed, and do some of them really need to be completed based on some of the recent findings that we know about the current flow trends with the city in the summertime. And in the future, we are, based on the city's general plan amendment proposed, I believe it's proposed, is that correct, is about a population build-out of 12,500 people permanent for build-out. We took a look at where the areas would be developing within the city, what would the concerns be, and where are the target areas that we really need to focus on as we looked at evaluating the entire city's collection system. We know that based on current vacant lots, there's about 200 units of infill potential. There are some second units that are going in and getting approved. And then there's a list of some of the significant developments that will be taking place here in the near future. And so we talked about all those, and those have been considered and incorporated into our study and findings. We took a look at the wastewater plant flows, in particular to look at some of the flow trends as we evaluate how the collection system hydraulically behaves from daytime to nighttime, from dry weather to wet weather events. The city's current flow is about 0.8 million gallons per day. I believe back in 1986 they were about 1.2 to 1.3 million gallons per day at that time. Total plant flow is about over a million gallons per day, and that's current flows. Of note, as we take a look at not only the plant flow data, but also take a look at the inflow and infiltration monitoring, which I'll talk briefly about, there's a significant amount of inflow and infiltration that comes into the city's collection system, and certainly therefore ends up at the plant and impacts the collection system during rain events. And then you'll see a small hump around June and July, although it's not that small, it is significant. That's the summer peak that you see with the influx of tourists. As I mentioned before, back in 1986, with the water demands at that time, as the cities move forward and water conservation has gotten very aggressive, we've actually seen a decrease in overall wastewater flows to the plant. And most of our reports and how we define how units of measure are in flow, we define per population or per capita. We are seeing currently about 80 gallons per person per day wastewater generated at the plant, which is fairly typical of this area, particularly the Central Coast. You look at the national average and you see a range of up to 120 gallons per day. And in fact, back in 1986, the city's demands were about 140 gallons per capita per day at the wastewater plant. What are our future flow projections? Well, we took those per capita demands and the characteristics of the city's wastewater flows, projected that into the future based on our build-out projection of population. We estimated that the occupancy factor within the city at 80% would remain fairly constant in the coming years. We do know that there are going to be some second units and a little bit of densification that possibly may happen. So we've taken that into consideration in our projections as well. And again, just of note, like I said, the prior year's flows were about 1.2 to 1.3 million gallons per day, and that flow now has come down. So that's monitoring went fairly well, although it was a dry year, so we really felt that we did not get the information that we were really looking for in order to really evaluate the system. And so we opted to then do another year's worth of inflow infiltration monitoring. So we did 2 years in a row, and we got a pretty significant rain event last year and a lot of resulting data out of that. What were the results? Well, we had about 11 stations that we monitored throughout the city in the different drainage basins in the collection system. We see that there's a significant amount of inflow. That's primarily the issue at hand. There is some infiltration. The inflow is the water that comes in directly from openings in manholes, pick holes, and drains and so forth. And then the inflow is generally not as immediate. You'll see that coming from sources such as leaky pipes and cracks and joints and so forth. And where is it most severe and where are the most significant issues? It's predominantly in North Morro Bay. That's where we see most of the inflow problems occurring, based on the monitoring results that we did. Based on that, we took a look at the magnitude of some of the problems and then put together priorities as far as what areas the city should be focusing on to try to remediate some of those infiltration issues. And so that was where we left off, I believe, last time. And again, we took a look at each of the individual drainage basins and prioritized them based on the areas of most concern. And again, predominantly North Morro Bay is where the focus really is as far as most of the inflow impacts to the system. And we've
to the specifics that I think would be good to be sure and deal with. Do you want me to explain it? Or you? There's and I think this is a comment many people will have. Just as you go through materials, often there's a reference in a number of places to asbestos cement drains. Just explain what those are, because people hear asbestos and sometimes get excited. And then specifically on I had trouble, so if you could elucidate it as you go through the lift station 3, whether that 6-inch diameter is enough or that's one of those recommended as the discharge, just as you go through it and get to it, be sure and deal with that. But if you could explain, I think certainly for my benefit and I think many of the public, when you say asbestos cement force main, what that means, because people hear the word asbestos and they say, oh my gosh.
Well, I hope people aren't all that concerned, frankly. Last time I saw an estimate was that 75% of the water pipes in the United States are made out of asbestos cement.
Yes, I know that.
In sewer, that's a little less common, significantly less common. They're often used in pressure situations because they do a good job of handling the pressure. Most of the collection system is clay pipe, which is an inert material. The asbestos cement pipe is coated with an epoxy or a glass coating. That reduces the possibility of corrosion because you get a lot of hydrogen sulfide gases that would work on the asbestos material. The problem with asbestos cement pipe is not in the use of it. It's not in the drinking of the water that is passed through the pipe. But even if it were, we have a lot of water pipe, vitrified clay pipe material, which is good for gravity uses. In newer applications, we use plastic now primarily. PVC being the material of choice. We have some cast iron lines. Cast iron was another earlier material used for force mains. The AC pipe was real popular after World War II and into the 70s. And then when the chronic problems, the clear problems in the manufacturer with the airborne asbestos became a problem.
So many of the references to resurfacing at the lift stations are really dealing with keeping that coating intact.
Well, the coatings the coatings are in the pipe, not at the lift stations.
Yeah, well, I mean in the okay, the coatings are.
But we need to make sure that the piping material the biggest problem, and we had a failure. Oh, it's been probably 20 plus years. Generally, what occurs when there is a problem in the liner. Or the lining material of the pipe isn't a health hazard. What happens is that the gas, let's say at the top of the pipe, which is where the gas has a tendency to collect, if there's an imperfection or a crack or a chip in the liner, then the gas, the hydrogen sulfide particularly, works on the pipe material itself, gets it soft, and then the pipe
collapses.
Can break. Yeah. And you see that.
But there's many mitigations. I mean, there's a great deal of attention.
Yes, there is a lot of attention to
that.
Yes.
And then the other aspect is like someone in their house, asbestos, if it's there, is okay unless you cut it. And then you're careful that's.
Well,
I just had trouble following from some of the tables.
Well, I would defer to Steve on it, but we're talking about a force main. So similar to a water line, you've got pressure pushing
coming
the material
the
through there. It's not versus gravity.
Okay.
Accessible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. So here we are. I'm going to kind of dive right into now the new part of our presentation tonight, and this is going to be focusing on the analysis of the collection system and the lift stations, our findings and recommendations, and then wrapping up with the overview of the capital improvement program that's being recommended tonight. The collection system, as you know, it's predominantly a gravity system. You do have 3 lift stations, as Bill had mentioned, conveying wastewater via gravity and then force main pipes eventually to the wastewater treatment plant. We set up a hydraulic model, essentially a spreadsheet model, to evaluate the system. We looked at both existing and future conditions, dry weather flow conditions, wet weather flow conditions, daily diurnal fluctuations and peaking characteristics of the wastewater system. And so we looked at all the various hydraulic parameters and conditions that the city's system may encounter. The model was developed based on the city's Atlas maps. The city has very good and comprehensive records available for our use as far as developing the model. So the basis of our model was built on the city's existing records. We modeled predominantly the 8-inch and larger sewers, the smaller collectors, the 6-inch mains were not part of that analysis. We focused on the major trunk lines and carriers that are conveying wastewater hydraulic capacity at length tonight. That's part of the presentation.
But we do know the physical condition.
That's what I was wondering.
The Atascadero Road portion of the trunk line, about a third of it's been replaced. It collapsed back in the late 90s. Right. It was replaced. The remainder of the Atascadero Road line section has been lined. That was an area that had lots of cracks in it. We were getting lots. We were getting up to 200,000 gallons a day infiltration. That was lined in the winter of 2000. The line going running north on Main Street, we found that that line is true on grade and the pipe is in pretty good shape.
Very good. Thank you.
One of the aspects of the collection system that I think is probably most critical is evaluation of the joint sewer. So one of the key parameters is how is that capacity defined and how did we define and evaluate the capacity of that joint sewer in our model. And we based the agreement between the city and the Cayuga CSD is based on a 40% capacity share for Cayuga CSD, 60% city on this joint owned line. And so we set up our model based on 40% of the available hydraulic capacity going through that line as being the capacity of Cayuga CSD and the remainder of that being, or the majority of that, the 60% being the city's. So we based that on the flattest 12-inch sewer, which would have the least carrying capacity in the whole trunk line, as our basis for that flow model. And that number turned out to be 242 gallons per minute. And so you'll probably hear that number several times throughout tonight's presentation. Weather flow conditions, peak flow conditions, peak dry weather flow conditions, and peak wet weather flow conditions. And these are the criteria that we generally use throughout the model as we looked at each individual pipeline that we analyzed. And again, the D over D criteria simply means the small d, which is the depth of the flow in the sewer pipe, relative to the large d, which is the diameter of the pipeline. And then as we went through the model, both existing and future conditions, we took a look at the overall collection system. We really saw that the city's collection system in general is in really good shape. And there are some focus deficiencies, and I'll get into some of the details on those, but overall the city system is in pretty good shape. We noted that there were several improvements that were recommended back in 1986 that are no longer needed due to the fact that overall flows have decreased and likely still do not need to be implemented as part of build-out in meeting the city's future needs. One of the specific areas of concern is right at Main Street and Quintana, Main Street between Quintana Road and Highway 41. Currently, that area of sewer main is it's got enough capacity at this point in time, but it is a little bit marginal, needs to be looked at a little more carefully. It certainly is one that looks like it's getting close to capacity just based on dry weather flow conditions. We looked at the possibility of, again, getting to inflow and infiltration. A lot of the deficiencies that we have taken a look at are induced by the wet weather flow component. And so if we can get some of these inflow and infiltration components reduced, Tanner Road from Morro Bay Boulevard up towards the McDonald's, that particular area also is marginal in capacity, in part due to wet weather flow conditions in the future. And also in part due to the cycling of wastewater flows from the lift station. And what happens is the lift station number 3 turns on, it evacuates the wet well, and then when it's through pumping, it shuts off. And so you'll get kind of a pulsed flow, a cyclic flow, coming through the collection system at that location. and it takes a little while, but it will eventually dampen out in the collection system. But there are areas there, or that particular reach there is being influenced by the pulsing nature of the lift station turning on and off. Specifically on Quintana Road from Butte to Morro Bay Boulevard, this was another area that was noted as having some capacity concerns. And this reach, I believe, was predominantly due to the lift station influence. Lift station number 3, that is. It's a little bit hard to read. I apologize. I didn't have a blow-up of this, but this sort of highlights some of the areas that I just spoke to in regards to some of the capacity issues. As you can see here on Main Street, as we get close to Highway 41, and this is one of the reaches that is marginal capacity right now due to peak summer day flows. And the area that we were just speaking to that has some issues relative to some of the effects of the lift station are up on this reach here. And this is Quintana Road, I believe, from around Butte Street. And then this is the joint sewer that begins, I believe, at around Vashon and North Morro Bay, continues down Main Street to Atascadero Road. It becomes a 12 to a 15-inch sewer, and then as it rounds the corner onto Atascadero Road and heads towards the treatment plant, it becomes an 18. And that was when we just were speaking to that part of that had been replaced to hydraulically to a 27-inch fairly recently. So, again, we value.
So I have a question on the concept of deficiencies, which is intuitively obvious more than the pipe can handle.
Okay.
But when that happens, say you cited the Quintana Main Street area, when that happens, physically what happens to the fluid?
Yeah.
Because I think that's the crux for people to understand why you invest in these things, what bad thing happens if there's more than the pipe can handle.
Right. That term we call surcharging in the sewer, and essentially for a gravity-type sewer system, if you look back up at what we talked about as far as what we called the D over D criteria, we design gravity sewers to flow partially full, and we generally never design them for full pipe flow conditions. That's generally accepted design criteria for that sewer. When you reach go over capacity on that sewer, then you do surcharge. You essentially fill the pipe up full, and it's flowing full under full conditions. And then you get enough flow, and then it will also start rising in pressure, and then you'll eventually rise up through the manholes and have a spill. So because you've exceeded the hydraulic carrying capacity of your gravity sewer system. So now focusing on the jointly owned sewer, again, stretching from North Morro Bay around Vashon Street down Main Street to Highway 41, and then rounding into the treatment plant on Atascadero Road. Again, we evaluated the sewer based on the Cayuga CSD's capacity share being present in that collection system at any point in time. We had to make the assumption that they have that capacity available. We have to presume that they would be using that capacity at any point in time throughout the day or evening in our model. So we identified a number of deficiencies along the stretch here of the joint sewer. Predominantly this point in time, as Bill had mentioned, based on existing dry weather flow conditions, the joint sewer is not at capacity at this point. It has additional capacity still. But it's the wet weather flow conditions that we really have more concerns with in regards to present day conditions. So, and that was where we did a lot of focus on the inflow infiltration monitoring too, to see what kind of hydraulic peaks we're seeing through the system. And those specific peaks that were measured as part of our monitoring results were actually used as part of the model. A lot of times you don't have that data available, and you have to do sort of an academic approach as to coming up with what you believe is a reasonable peaking factor, you know, either based on textbooks such as Metcalf and Eddy and other source materials. But in this case, we actually had some specific data to help us model the collection system, more to true life conditions out in the field. So, and then we, of course, looked at future deficiencies and we started not only seeing that in the future we would have during the summertime, but the actual projected flows in the future we're starting to show some capacity concerns on the jointly owned sewer. And again, I apologize, though this really didn't come out very well. I apologize for that. But the this exhibit, which is in your report, shows the areas of extent of the deficiencies. And as we talked about, the jointly owned sewer begins in North Morro Bay here and extends all the way down Main Street until it gets to Tascadero Road and then heads into the wastewater treatment plant. From I believe it was about it was south of Mindoro, I forget the exact street name, where we started having some capacity concerns present day due to wet weather conditions, not dry weather flow conditions, but wet weather conditions, beginning at the 12-inch sewer onto the 15-inch sewer and then, of course, the 18-inch sewer. And we felt the 18-inch sewer really was the most critical at this point in time as far as a priority and a need to upgrade the capacity of that joint sewer. So, and then we took a look at the, and I will get into the actual capital improvements at the end of the presentation as well. So, and we took an in-depth look at the city's three lift stations. As you know, that as Bill had mentioned, you have three lift stations that convey wastewater to the wastewater treatment plant. We focused on some of the general operations, day-to-day issues and improvements that we felt needed to be considered as part of the city's capital improvement program. We met with Dave Phillips and went through each of the lifts to be performing, both existing and in the future. There's a lot of information on this slide, but
Before we proceed to the lift stations, I just want to check, were there any pressing questions just the collection, the gravity aspects there? Okay, just checking. So,
okay, great. Thank you. This is just a summary, and you can see that in the report that you have as part of your packet as well. But this is just a summary of the three lift stations. Lift station one is in the Cloisters area. That's a relatively new lift station built in 1997. It has a standard wet well setup with submersible pumps, which is what we are desiring and recommending the other two lift stations be built to at some point in time in the future, mainly due to concerns with access and confined space. It's a safety issue, and those are the main driving concerns and factors relative to the other two lift stations. But lift station one is relatively new. It's in good condition, and it appears to be doing quite well in regards to servicing that area, the Cloisters and the beach track. Lift station two, built in 1954. This is the lift station that is situated over on Front Street near the harbor. So as Bill had mentioned, it's in an area of potential concern if you ever have a problem with a spill or a capacity issue or a malfunction of that lift station, as far as its particular location. On Front Street, I believe, near the Embarcadero. It's on the Embarcadero area near the bakery and.
Yeah, it's right. It's right down below. Right below at the end of Surf Street, you go down the stairs to the
Embarcadero and people enjoying the afternoon.
Well, I might note, too, that during the Harbor Festival, we really need to go out of our way to make sure that there is an aisle clear for us in the event that there is something that goes on and that we maintain free access. The vendors don't care for it, but we have to do it.
Okay, so that kind of gives you an overview of the three lift stations. I thought I had included.
Excuse me. What condition is the number two?
Lift station number two, it's actually in pretty good condition in regards to the concrete. It does have some capacity concerns with the wet well, which I'll kind of get into, which is a little bit more of some of the hydraulic concerns of the lift station. But for its age and for the looking at the concrete, which a lot of times lift stations with exposed concrete tend to be conducive to attack from acids and hydrogen sulfide. But it's in pretty good shape, yeah, overall.
Okay, how about lift station three? That's the one at Quintana and yep. South Bay?
Lift station number three, yes. It's in relatively good shape, although the one thing of note was that the lift station wet well does have some pitting and corrosion, and we do recommend that one be resurfaced, conditioned, and relined as part of a capital improvement.
And I might note, just for the board and for the public's illustration, is that a wet well is an underground tank where the gravity lines feed into it. And then there's usually an adjacent dry well, which is where all the pumps and the mechanical equipment and the switchgear is located. So the wastewater flows into the wet well, and then when it reaches a certain
6-inch discharge, as I understood it, because that's basically a pulse flow, really having a continuous larger carrying capacity is not the issue in that case.
Thank you.
And just as a point of clarification, though, the force mains we did evaluate, it was the gravity collection.
Just the gravity. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
That were 6 inches and less, we did not evaluate. But the force mains, we looked specifically at hydraulic carrying capacity and velocities in the force main as it's pumping, which relates to energy costs and pumping. So, and I'll speak to that also briefly here as we talk about the hydraulics of the lift stations. Just the other item of note at lift station 3, because of its location, as Bill had noted, it's close to the creek in that area at the intersection, and it has historically flooded in the past, and that particular lift station can inundate during flood conditions. Although even though that there, I believe it was in 93 when it happened, I believe, according to Dave, that it still didn't spill, but they had flooding in that area where the lift station was literally underwater, but it still managed to perform adequately without any spills. So, okay, and this is kind of an overview of the hydraulic parameters of the lift station. And I actually, there's another slide right behind that in your table in your report that I didn't get in here that speaks more specifically to the actual flow conditions that we're seeing. And lift station number one, again, this lift station number one is the one in the Cloisters area that serves Cloisters in the beach tract area, what we call, I believe it was drainage area number 6 for the city. That lift station has, and it's the newer lift station of the three. So, taking a look at the flow conditions, it looks like that lift station from a pumping and hydraulic standpoint is going to be sufficient in the future, although we did note that this particular area is one of the more significant areas in regards to inflow and infiltration. So it's seeing a lot of flow during the wintertime conditions, and we do recommend that be focused on in regards to reducing that overall peak hydraulic demand during the wintertime to better safeguard that lift station. So hopefully part of that reduction in inflow and infiltration will kind of better safeguard that lift station. But hydraulically, it appears to be doing fine. As we understand it, that the pumps can run in duplex mode, meaning both pumps turning on. But as I understand it, I'm talking with the operations staff, that has not happened or rarely happens. It generally runs on a single pump with one on standby. So lift station number 2 was a little bit more marginal. Although, again, based on our discussions with staff, it appears that lift station has performed well and has not needed to kick on that second pump during even peak hydraulic conditions during wet weather. Based on our review of flow projections and what we see coming in both today and in the future, we think that capacity is going to be marginal. And so it needs to be monitored closely. We don't believe it necessarily needs repair today immediately, but it certainly needs to be continually looked at in regards to changing flow conditions and making sure that it's sufficient. It does have, I believe lift station 2 is one, though, that the wet well lift station to have completely submersible pumps, and that would be done in conjunction with that upgrade to better provide or eliminate the access of having to go into a confined space to maintain your lift station.
I just want to, I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but I want to make sure I understand when, because that was one, it was pretty clear that in the future it might have to be enlarged. And there's no problem with the city already owning the land right of ways, and this is just whatever the capital cost would be, not any land acquisition.
Well, there won't be any need for land acquisition, but there's always a but, isn't there? We need to make sure that there's a lot of good ideas for things to do in the Front Street parking lot area, and improving the lift station is generally not discussed. You know, there's talk about the Maritime Museum and lots of parking structure and all kinds of stuff. We're going, don't forget about the lift station. So it needs to be clearly set forth and remembered as a priority.
I think when we discuss this later, that's something we definitely want to highlight, because we could be undercutting our capacity to provide needed capacity.
Right. Okay. And lastly, on lift station number three, lift station three hydraulically looks like it's in pretty good shape. So we didn't really see any concerns in regards to existing and future flows. Although, again, similar to lift station two, at some point in time, we do recommend a capital improvement program to convert that lift station over to and risk for the city as they need to do confined space entry into their facilities. One of the other things that we took a look at, this table actually I have reproduced in graphical form, but we took a look at just an overview of the pump, actual total pump run times at the three lift stations during various times of the year. Including what we would call a typical dry weather day, a wet weather day where you've got a lot of rainfall, significant rainfall, a typical summer weekend. Then we looked at a significant holiday weekend such as 4th of July, Labor Day, and then as Bill had just mentioned, also looking at the Harbor Festival weekend to kind of see what's happening throughout the city and some of these key and critical dates. What we noted as we look at this, you'll see it looks like I have a little labeling problem there on that graph, but I believe the green line, so let me see what that is. I believe the green line is lift station three. Let me see if I can. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, lift station two is actually the line on the very top. Lift station three is the purple line in the middle, and lift station one is the blue line on the very bottom of the chart. So, first of all, I guess as we take a look at lift station number one, again, which is on the bottom of the chart, you'll kind of see what you'll see is you'll see in the wintertime around this time frame here, you'll see this peak.
Inflow. How can you explain how, I guess to cut right to it, how labor intensive, how resource demanding is it to investigate and repair that kind of thing? Because you're caught with, gee, we want to spend money now to save money later, but we don't have it. Could explain that, because that's very important on the Cloisters one.
Well, and that's one of the critical components of the plan as well, is to make an estimation of what personnel needs and what equipment and time frames are necessary to do these tasks. You're looking for leaks at that time of year. Yeah.
Right. And the city's been working on this INI issue, you know, for some time, and so they've already been taking steps to reduce the inflow and infiltration. We had outlined of course, some of the other measures, you know, the city's sealing up some of the openings in manholes. They put in what they call these gasketed covers that capture rainfall, prevent it from falling into the manhole, which is a big source of inflow. They're implementing smoke testing to try to identify breaches in the system and cracked pipes and areas of potential illicit discharges from storm drain connections and things of that nature. So that's already been underway and implemented. As part of their overall efforts to try to identify and reduce INI.
And I might note to tag on to that is that we knew that we had these issues, and what this analysis has done is help us to focus in on drainage areas, and that's why we've broken the community into drainage areas, so that we come back the next rainstorm, and you know there's a lot of tasks, but. Just to dovetail onto what Steve said, as soon as he started identifying these problem areas, we've done smoke testing in the northeast beach area, and we're looking at all the various areas where we're seeing the detailed INI issues.
My point was laying the groundwork for when we discuss resources, so that it's understood that if we're going to have less, you know, less electricity for pumping, less wear and tear on the pumps, on the whole system, that that will cost some money, but it's going to save money later. And I wanted to make that relationship clear.
That's correct. Right. And in fact, as I had mentioned earlier, if some of the inflow and infiltration can be reduced to, you know, some degrees, there are some areas of pipeline impacts that we noted that possibly could be averted, so which would be a real positive thing to not have to replace a sewer or upsize a sewer. So, but catching all the sources and being real successful at getting the INI down is also a difficult task. So it does take work and commitment to do that and to get the overall reduction that's needed. So.
And again, that also relates to the wastewater plant. Clearly, I mean, we've got stormwater flow that needs to be segregated from wastewater flow, and the permit, the current and the contemplated permit for the plant, clearly provide requirements to eliminate inflow and infiltration of rainwater and groundwater to the greatest extent practicable.
I could add our statement,
yes,
and everyone ought to be thanked, so. And it helped keep the rates lower.
Right. But yeah, I think your conservation efforts throughout the city
That's why there's so much emphasis on the control of the infiltration, the inflow, because we've done the conservation part wonderfully.
Yes.
Yes, that's correct. So one of the other interesting points on the slide before I move on, again, Lift Station 2 is the green line up at the top. That one predominantly serves the Embarcadero and the tourist area, and you can see in the summertime what happens. And so this is when that lift station is working its hardest. And you can see that it's not receiving a lot of inflow infiltration during the wintertime compared to the bottom, this middle line here, which is Lift Station 3. And you can see what's happening here during the winter. And in fact, of note, you know, we did all the infiltration inflow monitoring throughout the city's collection system. One of the things we didn't note in our study, because you can't see it as well in actual physical readings, is infiltration, because it tends to be more gradual. Well, when we looked at the pump run times at Lift Station 3, we see a fairly significant rise in pump run times during the wintertime as the rainfalls are occurring, but it takes a while for it to go back down, and that's telling us that there's likely some infiltration issues, some slow lingering infiltration of water into the system. We other than identifying that that's a potential concern, we weren't able to get specific as to where that's occurring, but we did note that as a concern, but certainly not as high of a priority as some of the other inflow going to help, and some of the smoke testing that will be done is going to help identify some of those potential sources.
Thank you.
Since these are run times, is there a graph, or if you could just verbally translate into total flow? And I'm thinking that Lift Station 3, while it has this tremendous upswing of both inflow and perhaps infiltration, it's a smaller amount of effluent, or maybe it's not. I mean, you see what I'm getting at? It's runtime times capacity, and then we'd have where the bigger problem is.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not sure that I did quite understand that.
Well, in other words, if I had to choose between Lift Station 1 and Lift Station 3, and which would I go after first, you look at the graph. This graph, it looks like you'd go after Lift Station 3, but that may not be actually the larger problems.
It's a little bit deceiving, yes, because of the varying capacity.
That's what I meant. So when you account for capacity, which is the bigger problem? And again, I'm getting it.
Well, when you look at, you know, just going off of table 6.4, Lift Station 3 pumps 220 gallons a minute. Lift Station 1 pumps 277 gallons a minute, so they're fairly close.
So Lift Station 3
is 2 is at 700 gallons
problem.
A minute. So.
Yes. Okay. So that kind of gives you an overview of what we looked at in regards to the lift station. And I didn't, yeah. And table 7-3 will give you kind of the overview of the, or the specific listing of the capital improvements that we're recommending. And what we, and we categorize them into near-term and future capital improvement projects. In developing the capital improvement program, this is essentially the city's tool, planning tool, to plan for needed capital improvements identified in this master plan. We've generated a table that you're looking at probably right now, table 7-3, which shows the estimated costs. We've put in what we call both hard and soft costs, hard costs being the actual construction dollars to implement that capital improvement, the soft costs being the design and engineering, construction oversight, and administration costs that would go along with making that project complete. We generally express, when we do a capital improvement program, costs are expressed in today's dollars, 2006 dollars, or I believe as the last draft of this report, year-end 2005 dollars. So as you're looking into the future, if you have a project that will be coming up, say, 10 years from now, we're telling you what today's dollars are that you need to plan for, but you need to then consider escalating those dollars into future as you're moving forward in your planning process. And then we took a look at the timing of the projects in regards to, you know, specifically which projects are what we consider near-term or even immediate in nature, ones that need to be implemented right away to address some concerns. And then what's the timing of certain projects relative to when should they be implemented in the future, the timing aspects of some of the future projects relative to how many units we think are going to be needed to trigger that capital improvement. And so throughout the report, we speak to some of those improvements relative to estimated number of units that would be needed before that improvement would be triggered.
Define a unit?
Oh. Yeah, by a unit, we mean a single family household dwelling. So that would be, I forget the actual number per unit for a sewer flow that we have projected, but.
Well, what we've done is we've allocated a flow to a single family dwelling and use that as our benchmark. So if a commercial, you know, similar to the water equivalency table. So we use the EDU or the equivalent dwelling unit flow as the benchmark. And so, as Steve points out, the timing of it is, you know, how much new development occurs to the point where, you know, it becomes more and more critical.
To help me, perhaps others on table 7-3, if you could say run through say AO3, just give us the definitions. I see that. There you get to quantity, and there's value 1,750, and just explain what that is, what the LF is, and
so. Okay, sure. Yeah, what we did, if you look, for example, at the first line item under AO2, which is a sewer replacement on Main Street, south of Farrell, between Farrell and Errol Street, and we've identified it by description, and then by the city's pipe, or lump sum, you know, single item. In this case, in the example we're looking at, the value is 410, and it's measured in lineal feet. That's what the LF stands for. Yeah. And then the unit cost, we've assigned unit costs per lineal foot to construct that improvement. In this case, it was $200 per lineal foot. And so if you take the $200 per lineal foot times the 410 lineal feet that's needed to complete that project, we come up with a construction cost of $82,000. And then we...
Question, if I may, please.
Yeah.
For definition, clarity, construction at $82,000. Explain, please, engineering administration at $32,800.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to,
speak to.
Then the next column is what we had referred to as soft costs, and that's the engineering and admin costs. And those are difficult to pin down exactly, but we budgeted 40% of what the construction cost would be. And you can run through some general numbers, you know, rule of thumb type numbers, but you'd see maybe about 8 to 10% for design services, You need to allow another 8 to 10% for construction management oversight and so forth. So there's some you know industry-wide gauges you can use to come up with those numbers more specifically. But we put an overall budget of 40%, which is probably a little bit conservative, but we certainly felt the need that as we're budgeting these capital improvements to put forth a reasonable number that we felt was a good budgetary number.
Let me ask a question on that also, please. Each of these items, capital improvement.
But as we're looking, each of the capital improvements that we're speaking to in regards to, say, a sewer improvement, mm-hmm. a design of a new sewer, or a lift station upgrade, those will all require a design element and a construction oversight element. So there's a pretty clear distinction between going through the design process, bidding the project, and then going into construction.
But couldn't two or three be included in one project?
Perhaps. I think it's nomenclature. The construction number is what you would expect to pay the contractor.
Right.
And then the soft costs are everything else, the permitting, the design, and all that
thank
stuff.
You.
So if we do two or three of these projects, we can probably have, you know, at one time under one project, we can probably have some savings, particularly in the engineering administrative side.
Well, that's where I was coming from. Thank you.
With this, because I suspect funding fee structures, et cetera, will be subject of other hearings. This is to see, is this sensible, knowing that somehow it'll have to be paid. Okay. And for, as I understand the process, this at least conservatively gives figures so that you can get a sense of priority. And as it moves through the capital construction process within the city, they'll look to jiggle to say, why don't we move this or that because we can save here or there, but at least the ballpark is there. And there has to be something to begin the public discussion of, impact on rates. And I think is enough for the ballpark.
Off. It also gives us a forum, and I think it's important for us to understand that there's certain sections of the system that if nobody ever pulled another building permit, we would need to do anyway. And there are portions of the system that only need to be upgraded with subsequent development. Now, ultimately, it's a philosophical decision on the part of the board and the council on how all these things get paid for, whether you do it strictly out of the rates, which is what we do in the water system, or whether you you have a system set forth where you have fees, development fees on a basin-by-basin basis so that new development contributes perhaps significantly to the upgrades that are necessary.
And just to make sure I understand, we'll have that discussion at another time.
Absolutely, yes.
Not tonight. That's what I'm saying. Tonight is, does this make sense, money aside, does this make sense for what the city needs in terms of maintaining services and a sense of priority, the way the report is, of first things first, from the point of view of just as you need police, fire, you don't have a city without water and sewer. Okay. And so they're all in the same class. So it's a very important that we not view that anything is we not view it from the point of view, well, these are frills, but we don't need to overdo it, but it's just part of being a city. You have to have
right.
these things.
And there's a total cost of about $2.3 million. Does Cayucas share in any of these costs, and if so, at what percentage?
Right. Well, that's part of the issue at hand. And, we started out, of course, first looking at really strictly the capacity issue. What we presented in the master plan tonight is our recommendation for the actual improvement. We didn't go into the detail and depth as to exactly how that cost sharing would happen, but obviously it would be in accordance with the agreement.
But are they obligated to?
Well, and that's one of the things. That's one of the probably the primary reason that we've had this hiatus between September and now is that we've been looking at strategies internally on how we can mitigate this. Do we need to upgrade the jointly owned line or For example, can we run a parallel line down Ironwood or mm-hmm. you know, some other strategy? And then over the last 2.5 months, we've been talking with the sanitary district about this and at least planting the seed of there are these issues. This is a jointly owned line. Are you aware that, you know, there? And I don't want to get into too much detail, but the 242 gallons a minute is a really critical number. The Cayuga system, they have at the very end of their system, they have a lift station, which when one pump is running, runs about 1,100 gallons a minute. So you can pretty readily see that if they're going into the jointly owned line, the second they turn on that pump, they're over capacity. Mm-hmm. Now they do have their own line. So these are the discussions that we're having with them because there's contractual issues that lead us to the financial issues. And that's one of the critical things that we're talking to them about is, you know, do you on a project or is it a city-only line?
See, Bill, and correct, or I want you to correct or add to anything I'm about to say for the new members. There's a joint powers agreement, and it's basically two elected bodies, our city council and the sanitation district. And I say it that way because in my short time on the board, and Bill's been much longer, getting ready for or lead up to those joint power agreement discussions has not been a forum where they've gotten discussed. And I think, I suspect, because it's two elected bodies. I think the focus has been what is Morro Bay need for its system. That's what's happened here. We could, I think, be a resource should some technical issues come up, but as it stands now, we won't get into that. The City Council looks out for making sure we only pay our fair share. And that's the mechanism. It's not at this level. At this level, when it comes to how are Morro Bay citizens going to pay and pony up, a lot of discussion will take place. Is that a fair summary?
Yes. Very good. Excellent.
Okay.
A little less confused than a couple hours ago. Thank you. It's been an excellent report, by the way, Steve, in case nobody has said anything. For a layperson, an uneducated one.
For immediate or near term are driven by capacity and health and safety concerns, first and foremost. Other projects that might be you know, things just to provide improvements or general maintenance to the city's or improvements to the city's system are certainly considered secondary. So as we took a look at prioritizing these projects, we looked at the immediate concerns at hand, which would be the areas that have capacity concerns and the highest potential for health risk and spills. So that's how we took a look at prioritizing these capital improvements.
May I make a suggestion, having already the previous statement stands, but in future, for us lay people, it might help to have an addendum at the back with definition of LF, LS,
all the
DU,
acronyms.
These things that non-engineers wouldn't understand.
Certainly.
Oh, we just don't know yet. No. Okay. Are we at all discussing anything about the financing of this tonight? That's not our.
No, we're not. We're not getting into specifics on actually, how we finance and plan for financing these projects. We're kind of laying the foundation for the capital improvements that the city needs to start planning for in the future. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I want to emphasize, we're not dodging that. And we're talking about in the short and near term, we're talking about a total estimated cost of these improvements at almost $4 million. So, 3.8 and then, you know, 5 plus when you factor in the long-term items as well. So we're not talking an insignificant by any means. We're talking appreciable revenues that need to be raised in order to do these work tasks.
Are there any grants or outside beyond our
specialist in that for you who don't understand.
Yeah. But I'm also not one that walks in counting on getting a grant for something.
Bill knows where all the angles, all the place, all the money is.
I to say we're not going to talk about it, but continue a moment on finances. I think the number of policy issues that are well known when this when these kinds of situations come up to governing bodies, which Bill alluded to, as you fill out, do you have development fill it, or do you spread it through everyone? Do you do it by neighborhood? And those are really policy issues. The other issue is just the timeline of it. It's $4 million, but maybe not all has to be done now. And I think this is very important to because of, again, Bill mentioned, at some point we're built out and not annexing. And so it isn't a forever rising fees, and in fact you may get a hump of fees to do it now, and things may then actually improve, and it may not cost as much. So exactly, and I think the council is the place that will start dealing with these issues, whether it's a pay-as-you-go and those other policy issues.
Okay. When you include when you say ratepayers, you include residents and business, commercial and residents alike.
Yes.
And that's one of, again, the issues of, commercial will.
You look over this thing, there's no fluff in it. It all has to be done eventually. So I think our obligation is to recommend the city council proceed with it as the money is available and as it goes on.
Is that the action we're taking tonight, to pass this on to the city council?
We
would hope that you would, frankly, that as a result of discussion, you would agree with the methodology and the findings of the analysis and the plan, and recommend that the city council adopt the plan.
I so move.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. I want to ask it be helpful to. I think it speaks for itself. Helpful to say that adopt the plan, and we endorse the sense of priority, which I thought was very well laid out, and the principles behind it, because I think it isn't just, oh, good plan. It really was thoughtful. We listened, had a lot of questions. So it would be okay that we pass it with an endorsement of the sense of priorities.
I will amend
the plan.
I will amend my motion to include your statement.
Yes.
I'll second it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Very well stated.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. I would like to also ask if we want to include that one thing that came up about the parking lot. To recommend to the city council that any plan for the parking lot area must have a component to deal with the needs of lift station number 2.
You're talking about the Front Street parking lot right below Surfer.
Yes. It's just to highlight it, because I got the sense from Bill, and I never realized how critical that was there. And then you start thinking about construction and access, et cetera, and a lot of people, just so it makes people realize there's a vital piece of our infrastructure there.
Would you like to make a motion to that issue?
Yes.
I'll second it.
Okay. That any plans, that a requirement for any plans for the parking,
Front Street
parking lot, include a component. A component dealing with the needs of lift station 2.
I will second that.
All right.
Is that clear?
Yes,
sir. All in favor?
Aye.
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 And,
okay.
Steve, do we need anything further from you? Do you have anything further to tell us?
I don't think so. Hopefully I've covered it all.
You did very well.
We talked about, I think, all the improvements in the capital improvement plan, and if you have any other questions, by all means.
I don't.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I don't know if it takes a motion, but at least recommended to council they thank everyone for all the money they've saved through conservation. It can't be overlooked.
Well, and that's really a very good point. That's a community-wide program, and a community's conservation efforts and successful conservation efforts. It's been pared down to a mere $4 million plus, and that's epic.
Could I make a suggestion, please, that the board sanction you to include that as a small paragraph on your report to council? Because as Barry just said, it is important, and I think the public needs to know that we are doing the right thing, and council needs to know that, since most of them weren't here in 86, need to know that improvements have been made merely by conservation and money saved, as Barry mentioned. So I would encourage you to include that, please.
Yeah, I think that can be just by consensus.
Yes.
Well, we thank you and worth the wait. And we'll move on to new business, of which there's none listed. So we now move on to future agenda items. And the urban water management plan is next month or sometime in the future?
I hope it's next month. I got the graphs. I got the updated stuff that we talked about at the last meeting, and I hope it's here.
We also expect to hear about the Quintana...
Quintana South Bay Boulevard.
South Bay Boulevard.
That's traffic, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And are there any other... What we've done is, even if we don't expect to talk about them next month, if there's items that we think will be occurring over the next couple months, that they be mentioned. Does anyone have any?
We'll have the Green Cities stuff be coming up too,
and also the what will.
Yes, that was part of that. Okay. Yeah.
To add, there's urban water. We expect urban water management and Quintana. Next month, if time allows, or in subsequent months, the Green City will come back, the North Coast Transit Plan. I expect we'll get a report on the boardwalk will be a regular report of what's happening with that. And then the council, if we can get a report next time of the our updated bylaws, because...
Unfortunately, the city clerk wasn't in this afternoon we talked. The council did adopt amended bylaws for all the boards and commissions, specifically relating to the recommendation made by this board on absences.
Oh, right.
And I haven't seen a new copy of the bylaws, so I'm not sure if they're expecting us to do it or whether it comes to us. So
whenever
it's
then
kind
it'll
of
be
limbo,
in our packet.
It'll come back to us.
Okay.
Yes.
So the item number 10 is...
I move that we adjourn.
The next meeting is April 19th at school with everyone.
Here?
Yes, sir.
Yep. And any objections?
No.
Done? Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.